in an expression of regional solidarity. The Bay Area and Cascadia together, bringing you the West Coast. Siblings in Struggle. We'll round out the morning with the 11 o'clock hour with Pacific Underground. This is a program that holds space for API community members who want you to hear them. That's right. And you can hear them on KBOO Portland, your community radio. That's all coming up right after these important announcements from other members of your community, so stay tuned. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Sister Spirits Pagan Fair 2018 on Saturday, March 24th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Oaks Park Dance Pavilion in Portland. Sister Spirits Pagan Fair features pagan artists, ritual, storytelling, raffles, and more. There will be performances by Tracy Graham, Fairwind Blowin', and more. Again, that's Sister Spirits Pagan Fair 2018 on Saturday, March 24th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Oaks Park Dance Pavilion, 7805 Southeast Oaks Park Way in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, I'm Dale Holliday coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. Hi folks, welcome back to the show. This is part two of a conversation I'm having with Faith Reidenbach about her becoming aware of racial politics and racial justice issues. So thanks a lot, Faith, for coming back.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, in the last show, you were talking about your earlier years and your formative years and starting to learn about race or see things that you didn't really see before as a white woman and then engaging with black people and hearing things and seeing things you hadn't seen or heard before. So, and when we ended the last part, you were talking about a mentor, a black lesbian woman that you had met that told you to learn more about blackness. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, to learn more about blackness. You needed to start learning about whiteness, about your whiteness. So how, and read about it. So how did you start reading about whiteness, and what did it teach you?
Well, I was prompted by the Trayvon Martin incident, his mm-hmm. death.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had no words to talk about that. Even though I had spent 20 years reading books by people of color, books by immigrants, mm-hmm. books about racism, sociological type nonfiction.
Yes.
But I had no words to talk about him. I had no analysis. Like, you might remember, right after he was killed, there were things like, well, he was smoking marijuana. He had pictures of that on his phone. He had a picture of a handgun on his phone.
Right.
Well, George Zimmerman, he's a person of color too.
Mm.
Like, that meant anything.
All the stuff, yeah. All the deflecting. Yeah,
yeah.
Just the denial, the deflecting, yes.
But I didn't even have that word.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to talk about it, and I didn't know who was safe to talk about it. By
yeah.
that time, I lived in Corvallis.
Uh-huh.
Although I don't think it would have mattered. I think that was true for white people a lot of places.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with you on that one. Absolutely.
So I just sat with that for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Then I happened to see a brand new book mentioned called Waking Up White.
Mm.
And it's by a woman, very wealthy woman, or used to be, who grew up in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And a white woman. And it's her memoir of how she became a racial justice educator.
Right.
And it's not the best book in the world. It meanders, and it's hard to get past her class background.
Uh-huh.
But she talked about being white. And that was different from my reading. Now, people like Tim Wise had been publishing about that for years. I just hadn't read him yet.
Right.
And there's a book called Uprooting Racism, How White People Can Work for Racial Justice, that's now in its fourth edition. Mm-hmm. It had been around, but I hadn't encountered that yet either. So she ends up talking about white people educating each other and talking to each other, and this is an important part of being an ally mm-hmm. to people of color. So, and at the end of every chapter, there's questions for discussion. I thought, by God, I'm going to start a study group.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about this book. And there's 8 sections of it. So I thought, we'll have 8 weeks.
Okay. Yeah.
8 weeks. Okay.
So how'd you get this group together?
I put up flyers at the library and some of the, you know, liberal churches.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in my mind, I said that the limit would be 12 people, mm-hmm. or maybe 13 with me.
Right, right.
And I had 12 people respond. And they didn't all stick with it. In the end, there were 8 of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done this group 3 times, and there were always 8 people.
8. Magic number. Okay. All right. There you go.
So anyway, mm-hmm. The first time we met, which was at the North Co-op here in town, I said, here's what we do if someone comes in with a gun.
Hmm.
I was that scared.
Wow. Now, who was going to come in with a gun? I guess angry white people, I guess. Yeah. Hey, it has happened. It has been known to happen. So, yeah, that was good planning, actually, yeah. I guess.
It was 2014. It was well before mm-hmm. you know, the white nationalists crawled back out of
there. Yeah, they're rock. Yeah.
But, anyway, I just had the sense it was a really dangerous thing to do. And mm-hmm. no one laughed at me. They were mm-hmm. they were kind.
Yeah.
But so we had this 8-week discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that people who are younger than I am, like in their 30s,
mm-hmm.
are experienced at talking about race. And people who are more my age, mm-hmm. or even a little younger, are not experienced. Because now in college classes, people are talking.
Right. So at least they know the language.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Even if not the concepts really well, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we mm-hmm. were sticking to this book, and mm-hmm. I was really strict about crosstalk. I wasn't allowing crosstalk.
Yeah, good.
The last whole times.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because we had a white woman who was married to a Mexican national,
mm-hmm.
and we had a Guatemalan man who was adopted very early by a white family and considers himself to be white.
Hmm.
So they got into it a couple times.
Interesting.
And that was a big problem that first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked some about class in our slow way. You know, we got to know each other really well,
mm-hmm.
and trust each other, I would say, to, you know, a fairly large mm-hmm. extent over that period of time.
Were you able to determine why people came? Was there any prominent theme or?
Yes, one woman mm-hmm. had black children.
Mm-hmm. Adopted. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And let's see. One is from a family that her parents or her dad worked at OSU and knew a lot of people from other countries, and she grew up knowing people around the dinner table from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think she was just really open.
Yes.
And she had been part of the she'd been part of these conversation circles that Corvallis had in the 80s. That were about race.
Interesting.
So this is nothing really new.
So,
you know,
yeah. Oh, no.
Like
that's
been done,
yes, absolutely.
And done,
yeah.
And done, mm-hmm. but it had to be done again.
Yeah, always. Yeah. Did any people, even though they came to the group, did you get any pushback from the people who actually participated in terms of, you know, I know they agreed to be with the group, but were they willing participants, or did some people get there and then say, you know, just kind of push back on the whole concept? Or were they just, or were they very interested in following this through and being open to these concepts?
Well, the people who dropped out right away.
Yeah, okay, so it's a quick fix with that.
One woman who's mm-hmm. a trans woman, mm-hmm. trans, she's a non-binary person, I think.
Yes.
I think was just too knowledgeable. The book was too slow for her.
But the core group that stayed, those eight that stayed, would you say there were some good discussions or awakenings or...
Well, yes, on my part, for sure. It's mm-hmm. hard to tell about the other people.
Yeah.
But here's what told the tale, I think.
Okay.
We ended right about the time that the Ferguson uprising started.
Oh, boy.
That Michael Brown was killed.
Yes.
Left in the street 4 hours.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And his community wasn't having that.
Right.
And the Black Lives Matter movement started.
Yeah.
And so we were going to continue as a book group. That's what I think tells the tale, that people got something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to find other groups or other books to read together. But people were looking around at this, and this made news in a way that Trayvon Martin hadn't. You couldn't
right.
avoid it.
Yeah.
And people wanted to do something,
mm-hmm.
the people in this group. And white people more generally, I've seen after every crisis that's followed.
Mm-hmm.
After the massacre in Charlotte, mm-hmm. in Charleston. Do I have that wrong?
It was from Charlottesville.
Charlottesville was the Nazi march.
Right, that's the one I thought you were talking about. Oh, the church, yes, that was in Charlotte, yes. Yeah, to see, you can't even keep up. I mean, there's been so many atrocities.
Yeah. And then after Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, that killing by police especially got people really upset.
Oh, yeah. It's one on top of the other. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But every time those things happen, I've seen a bunch more people join the NAACP and a bunch more white people start saying, what can we do?
Right. Because it's so in your face.
Yeah. So we started a chapter of Surge.
Mm-hmm. And what does Surge stand for?
Showing up for racial justice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a national organization. And at that time, a lot of chapters were starting.
Yeah.
And so we started the very messy work of trying to talk to more white people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And be accountable to people of color in this town while we were doing that.
Yeah. And that's a balancing act. It really is. And, you know, what I like to tell people, what I like to tell white people when they seem so hesitant to talk about race and tiptoe around it, you know, sometimes you just will say the wrong thing. You know? I mean, you can't know what everyone's going to think is right. And if you don't mess up once in a while, you don't learn. And if you just stay very cautious and just, I just not want to deal with this, then nothing changes, and you don't grow as a person.
That's
either.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Paralysis of analysis. We want to have the perfect words. We want to wait till we have it all figured out.
Never happen.
And plus, we were taught, even mm-hmm. even in my generation, and it got worse since then, we were taught not to see race.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's the same.
Yeah, I know, and that is... Yeah, I mean,
and you'll see even in the newspaper, Mr. Jones, who happens to be black. Well,
there's a lot between that just happens to and black. There's a lot that happens between those words in life, you know. So yeah, and there's just so many. And I know that people on the radio, if they've heard my earlier shows, they know that I went to a couple of Surge meetings. They've heard some of the readings I did about things that white people say that are just crazy sometimes, and one of those is the "I'm colorblind."
Right.
They mean it well, but it's if you're colorblind, you don't see me, you don't see my life, you don't see what's going on. You know, we're not all the same. So, you know, not society doesn't treat us the same. Society's not colorblind. So, yeah. Well, we're kind of reaching an end of this show here, but in the final moment, if someone, a white person out there, wanted to learn more about how do we learn more, I mean, you've already talked about some books, you've referenced some good books, you've referenced Surge. I don't know if there's any other thing you might recommend.
An amazing white woman here in Corvallis put together a resource list for people who want to learn more.
Uh-huh.
For white people mainly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on our website, Corvallis Surge, S-U-R-J, .org. It's under the tab called One-to-One, because we have a one-to-one educational program where people can partner up and they can be just as ignorant and make dumb mistakes and ask stupid questions.
Kind of in a safe environment.
In a safe environment.
Nice. Beautiful. Well, there you have it, folks. Thank you so much, Faith, for being with us today.
Thank you again,
and
Dale.
Keep up the good works. Yes, it's been a pleasure. Keep the faith. You've been listening to Valley Views. I'm your host, Dale Holliday, and I'd love to hear from you. Comments, questions, ideas for future topics, or other matters you would like explored. Email me at valleyviews@kbu.org. That's valleyviews@kbu.org. Special thanks to Chad Howard from Corvallis Access Media for his technical assistance and support. I look forward to being with you again next time. And remember, as Doctor Who once said, I'm not in charge, but I'm full of ideas. Bye!
And that was Valley Views with Dale Holliday. And we're going to go jump right in to Flashpoints, as promised earlier. Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio.
Today on Flashpoints, meet John Bolton, your new national security advisor. Get ready for some war. Also, growing grassroots resistance to Operation Urban